255. My name is John. Joining me, as always, is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Hello. Hi. Good evening.
Good evening. It's been a while since I've seen your face, Ryan, and it's been a while since we've recorded this podcast, so famous last words and all that. I, at this point, I feel like I don't even need to, like, explain myself when... Last time we recorded, I was like, we're going to do it more often now because it's summertime, you know, because we have not done it more often. We've done it less often. So it's been a little while since we've done the podcast. I went on vacation, and Ryan, you got like a whole new job, I think, didn't you?
I did. Yes. Yep, I did that.
And it's like a 12-month job.
What?
It's like a 12-month job. Like, you have to work 12 months. Like, you're always working now, right?
I'm always working now, yeah.
Yeah.
It has been... well, basically, you know, for those keeping track at home, I have been... we've both been teachers for many years. And I...
But only one of us has ascended beyond that position. You know what I mean?
You know, I don't know. Jury is still out. No, right, yeah. It's beyond. But yeah, I had the opportunity to move into an assistant principal role. So I have been kind of like onboarding for that before the upcoming school year, and it has been some long days. That's been the vibe.
Yeah, well, congratulations. That's cool.
Thank you.
I am what you've grown beyond, you know, as you are now an administrator. So I think that's great. But yeah, so we've both been busy. And then I leave on Saturday to go to Iowa, which is just one state to the west of me. But I will be spending 7 or 8 days in Iowa riding my bike from one side of it to the other. It's an event called Ragbri, which I bet some of our listeners are familiar with. Ryan, are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am actually.
Okay.
One of my wife's friends has done it before.
Gotcha. And they're still alive, because that's the part I'm worried about. Like, will I actually survive this experience of riding my bike from one state to the other? So. I'm a little nervous about that.
But, yeah, it's also what the second Slipknot album is about.
So the second Slipknot album, is that the one called Iowa?
Yeah.
Okay. And so
and
the
that's
album,
why it's so angry. The album it's Iowa, about that. It's about that bike ride.
I never knew that the album Iowa, which I've never listened to, is actually about the organized bike ride from one side of Iowa to the other. But anyway, I'm doing that next week, and so I won't be around. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But we better get an episode recorded here. We should talk about Star Wars, and also talk about the other things surrounding Star Wars. So
yeah,
let's do that.
The entertainment industry, if you will.
Yeah, let's start with that, even though I put it at the end of our show notes or whatnot for tonight.
Yeah, it's kind of the elephant in the room, so we should just talk about it.
It is actually the elephant in the room to an extent, and I'd like to start by giving some gratitude or acknowledgement to a couple of other podcasts that sort of made me more aware of the fact that it's an elephant in the room than I otherwise would have been, because like obviously you know, we know that that the WGA, the Writers Guild of America, has been on strike. We've talked about that on this show, I think, since the last time we recorded. SAG-AFTRA, the Screen Actors Guild, has also gone on strike, and obviously like you'd have to be pretty unaware of things happening, I guess, in media to not know that. I will say that until I was listening to another Star Wars podcast that I really like called Force Center, Force Center podcast. There's multiple podcasts that start with Force, and I was like about to say one of them. Uh-huh. No, that's not it. I was about to say another one. Force Center podcast is a really, really great podcast that I listen to all the time. And one of the people on that show, Jennifer Landa, who some of our listeners may be familiar with, she she writes for StarWars.com sometimes. She has done work with Disney Plus and she's around. She's great. Jennifer Landa, she is a member of the Screen Actors Guild, and so she was saying, like, I don't think I'm supposed to be talking about, you know, work that's coming up or work that's coming out, like, from companies that the Screen Actors Guild is striking against. And then and the other members of that podcast were kind of in solidarity, saying, like, well, we're not, you know, part of that union, but, you know, we kind of agree with that from a principal perspective. And then I saw a tweet from Blast Points podcast, who, of course, we both, you know, love that show. And they were saying something similar, kind of tweeted out something similar to the effect of, like, well, maybe we're not going to be talking about Star Wars stuff coming up that's new, because we're not really trying to be out there. I'm putting words in, they didn't say this, but I think the implication was, like, we don't want to be promoting work from the studios that the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild are currently striking against, you know? So yeah, like I was saying, I hadn't even thought of that until, you know, those podcasts, and I'm sure many others had brought it up. And, like, once they did, I sort of thought, yeah, that seems like maybe not the right thing to do. What are your thoughts on that, Ryan?
Well, mama didn't raise no scab, I'll tell you that much. And, you know, obviously, like, if you've listened to this podcast in any capacity, I think you probably know where we stand on stuff like this. But, I mean, to make it, like, abundantly clear, I think I can speak on behalf of both of us to say we are definitely in support of everyone who's striking, which may soon include Broadway.
And UPS. UPS also, although that's a different thing, but, you know, shout out to them.
We are getting very close to general strike territory here, and you love to see it. You know, I think, like, in underlying theme, I think some of my issues with these, you know, giant consolidated media companies, which includes Disney, who acquired Lucasfilm, is that, you know, sometimes, a lot of times, there are choices made that definitely put, you know, profit above both art and people's livelihoods. I mean, I think on a Lucasfilm example, you can, you know, look as recently at Willow being removed from Disney Plus for a tax write-off, and just how, like, just scummy that is after people, you know, poured so much work and effort into making something really cool and, I would say, really special, to just have it all, like, just removed from existence, like that, so that, you know, some rich people can get richer. You know, I think all the stuff, I've been very vocal about my distaste for AI, deepfake, you know, using actors' live likeness who are not with us anymore, you know, that sort of stuff. And that's, like, one of the things that is at the center of this whole strike, and along with, like, better living wages for writers and actors as well. So yeah, long story short, like, I am definitely in support of this strike, and I am fine with this industry shutting down until it can, you know, get itself right. So where that kind of leaves us as, you know, just fans outside of the industry, consumers basically. Like, right now, none of the guilds have called for, like, a viewer's strike. And I follow Neil Gaiman on Blue Sky, and he's, you know, talking about this a lot. He talked in depth about how, like, how Sandman production was shut down over at Netflix and all of that. And, like, his, you know, his stance as a writer is, you know, don't, like, wait until the people who are striking give the word before, you know, if people call for, like, a viewing strike or a, you know, a podcast strike or whatever, then I think, like, okay, like, that's fine. Like, I will cancel my Disney Plus and HBO Max and whatever else. Like, that's fine, to be in solidarity there. But until, you know, until that time, like, people are saying that it might not serve the purpose that people think, like, a boycott would, because it would just make these companies, like, double down on how they're not making enough money from streaming, so they can't possibly pay better wages and that sort of thing. So, so I think, like, you know, if that's what the, you know, SAG and WGA, like, if they're like, yep, this is the next step, we've, you know, talked about it, we've decided that's, this is the next step, then yeah, I think, if we get word, like, I will happily do that. But as of right now, like, that's not what anyone's saying. So, and I think, you know, I get the argument about promoting, but I think, I don't know, I would like to think that we are, you know, what we do, and, you know, I consider it, like, above promotion. Like, I don't feel like a shill for any of this stuff, like, even though I like it. I think, you know, I think I can be critical of it, and, you know, I think when Ahsoka finally comes out, there's probably a 50-50 chance that I'm going to be like, hey, this is really good, I like this, you should check it out, or, eh, maybe not really worth your time. So, I don't know. I don't feel like we are a, you know, promotional machine in any way. So that's where I stand on it. What about you? Where are you at with it?
Well, I find that, I mean, my thoughts are evolving. And I think, like I was saying earlier, I didn't have a lot of thoughts. I mean, I had thoughts on the strike, you know, which is, like you said, I definitely echo, you know, what you said in that, like, I completely support it. And, you know, I'm fine with waiting. It sucks if I have to wait another year for Stranger Things, you know, but I will, if I have to wait another year for the new season of Stranger Things, like, I'll do that, you know, because I would rather have, the people who create it, be fairly compensated. And, not only that, I mean, I think, like, that, I think it's important to think about more than just the short term. Like, oh, I wanted to see this movie, I wanted to see this show, whatever. Like, and now I have to wait a little longer for this movie or this show. I think hopefully what's happening with these strikes is fixing major problems with the industry that will, you know, have very, very long lasting effects. Right. And so it's like, it might be uncomfortable now, and it's not uncomfortable for me. I'm not making any sacrifices. You know what I mean? I'm not the one on the picket line. I'm not the one who's not getting paid right now. I'm not the one who's like, like, to be clear, this is not uncomfortable for me. This is easy for me. You know what I mean? But if for the people who are striking, like, it's uncomfortable, it's difficult, but, like, I think it's in service, hopefully, of something that will impact a huge community of people for a very, very long time. And it needs to needs to be done. You know what I mean? So, yes, very much in support.
Yeah, this...
Go.
Okay. It's like you were saying, like, it's something like the industry as it is right now is not sustainable. Like if studios are really going to have actors come in for one day, motion cap them, and then own their likeness to use however they want with like AI generated films and stuff, like that is not sustainable. It's not sustainable for people who are running these companies to get just absurd amounts of money and getting more money because they're like canceling and removing content. Like this has to happen, like, or this industry will just like not exist at this rate because of some people's greed. So yes,
yeah,
it's like short-term sacrifices for the long-term health of an entire medium.
Yeah, so very much in support of all that. But you know, like as far as us having a podcast and how we tackle it, I'm trying to figure out the best approach for that, because, you know, as you say, maybe creators and the people who are producing these, not producing like from a financial perspective, but producing like artistically producing these shows and films and stuff, are not saying, hey, don't go watch them, right? Like Oppenheimer and Barbie come out this weekend, and I saw Greta Gerwig holding up a movie ticket online saying, go see my movie, not like, I'm on strike, don't go to it, right?
Right.
I guess I should, you know, add the caveat that I'm not like closely following everything Greta Gerwig is saying about Barbie. Maybe she said something today about don't go. I don't know. But like, as far as I know, the people who've created art already, when they were not on strike, want it to be seen. You know what I mean? So yeah. and they're not, as far as I know anyway, saying like that we shouldn't be. So I hadn't really thought about not watching Ahsoka, you know what I mean, when the time comes. Although I would be willing to not do that, to be willing to not watch it if that's what, you know, kind of the right thing to do would be at that time. But I was considering, like, maybe I don't want to talk about it on the podcast. Maybe I don't want to, you know, every week record a new episode where I'm like, hey, there's a new thing on Disney Plus and this is what I think about it, because it is to a certain extent a sort of promotional thing, not intentionally. Like, we didn't make this podcast thinking like we want to help make money for Disney, like we want to help promote the show, like that's not what it's about. I think what it's about for us is we love this stuff, and we thought if we recorded a podcast talking about it, other people would enjoy hearing people who enjoy this stuff, you know, talk about it. Which is not to say, you know, sometimes we'll talk about things we don't enjoy, but it's just enthusiast media, right? It's just fans who enjoy things, you know, recording some conversations about it because other people hopefully will want to listen to that, right? I mean, I listen to so many podcasts that are made by enthusiasts, and my favorite media covering media is usually made by enthusiasts more so than necessarily, you know, I don't know, professional whatever. So yeah, we're not thinking of our podcast as a promotional machine for, you know, whatever, but in some ways, in some very 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 small ways, you know, it is. So that's another thing I think about, is like, okay, well, what if I was on a podcast that had a lot of reach, you know? Well, it, you know, it kind of goes both ways, because it's like, well, if I was on a podcast that had a huge listenership, it would be maybe a more powerful thing to say, sorry, guys, we're not doing an Ahsoka show every week because we don't, you know, we want to take a stand and not contribute to promoting something. But then, like, you know, our show doesn't have a big listenership, so we're just like, you know, deprive is a strong verb, because I don't think it's really going to like ruin anybody's day who listens to our show. But like, we're depriving a very small number of people from hearing our thoughts on Ahsoka, and there's a million other podcasts they could go to hear them. You know what I mean? So like, is it really doing anything by not, you know what I mean? So it's more like, is it just a stand for the sake of taking a stand? You know, I'm just thinking out loud because I really don't know where I stand on this. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, I get it. And I think if there, you know, if if someone, if one person within Lucasfilm was like, hey, it would be cool if people just like held off for right now, like done, I would,
yeah,
I would be fine just like dropping it. But it's hard because this is, you know, it's stuff that was, this was created pre-strike, and that doesn't mean like these conditions didn't exist. They obviously existed in the time that Ahsoka was being made, but yeah, I don't know. I think like for me, like I don't want to do a thing where like people who are actually stakeholders in this stuff are like, ugh, that's not the right thing to be doing right now. Of thing.
Yeah, it's, I think that's...
I mean, it's the Barbie example is a good one. Like, it's like, I'm hoping to see that movie this weekend. I think it looks awesome. Yeah. We'll see what, how time works out. But like, yeah, without having anything, you know, from, you know, you get Ryan Gosling up there being like, wait till we get this stuff sorted out. Like, boom, like I'm done. Like, it's not happening. Sure. But, you know, I don't know. But they're like, also, yeah, and people involved in stuff are in a tight spot too, because like they can't promote anything right now. Like, that's part of the striking agreements. And I mean, it would probably feel gross to be promoting something right now anyways, but you know, it's, you know, it is possible that, you know, the promotion by people involved, it does serve a purpose. It does get, you know, butts in seats. And it, you know, I don't want, like, you know, if something like Barbie does poorly in the theater this weekend, if it has like a really low opening, and then like the takeaway is like, you know, studios are like, oh, that movie was too out there. It was too progressive. We need to, like, you know, if we're doing these kind of licensed movies, we need to, the takeaway here is like, we need more conservative, like, entertainment when it comes to this stuff. I don't know, but like, it could have like an adverse effect, and it's so hard to tell without, you know, without anyone talking about this, or saying like one way or another, you know, from the guilds. Like my wife and I were having a discussion over dinner a couple of days ago. We were talking about the strike and stuff, and we're like, is it weird that we're still watching pro wrestling? Like, you know, there's writers in that, there's actors in that. Like, is it weird to be like watching this when like everything else is kind of shut down? And I don't know. Like, the only conclusion we came to is like, pro wrestling needs a union. is basically it. That was the only real takeaway we came to, and you know, we ended up watching wrestling last night, and you know, it is what it is. So I don't know. It's complicated as like a consumer, as a fan of this stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely complicated. I mean, look at Willow is, you know, a great example, because Willow has gone away now. And one of the things that is a source of contention, as I understand it, is the fact that, you know, the people who make shows like Willow don't have access to the data as far as how many people watched it and how much money is a service like Disney Plus making or not making from a show like Willow. And if you think about like how films work, right? Like one of the things I've been reading over the last few years, and I've been reading the Making of Star Wars books, right? I'm reading the Making of Return of the Jedi right now, but reading the Making of Star Wars, one of the things that was a feel good story is how George Lucas chose to share so many points on the original Star Wars. You know, and a point, as far as I understand, is like a percentage of the gross, you know? And so he was sharing some of, like, I don't know how many points he got on Star Wars, but rather than keeping all those points himself, he was sharing some of those points with key, you know, members of the cast and crew as a way of saying thank you to those people and appreciating them and kind of trying to share the wealth a little bit, right? From what I'm, you know, reading and seeing and things like that, like a lot of times it seems like the accounting that the studios are doing is not necessarily transparent. And what if I have a contract with the studio where I'm supposed to earn a certain percentage of what the profits of a movie or show or whatever I've made are, but I don't even know what those profits are, and I can't trust that the accounting of those profits is accurate, then that seems like a difficult place to be, right? I saw comments from Tony Gilroy saying, I don't know how many people watched Andor, and I don't know how popular Andor was on Disney Plus in comparison to other Disney Plus shows, because we don't have access to that information. And they don't make that information available to the public. And so, you know, that's part of what the issue is. But I guess it's a long way of getting to the point that, we may not be helping anybody if we're not watching Ahsoka. And again, I don't think it really makes a difference if our little podcast talks about Ahsoka or not, but in principle, at least, it might not be helping things in that regard either. So I don't really know what the right thing is as far as all this stuff goes, but I guess it'll be a fluid kind of thing for us, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, just kind of where I'm grounding myself is, again, like, just to, I've stated this a few times, but just to restate it, it's what the stakeholders say. Like, what the you know, the guilds say. And, you know, that, and not in a, like, you know, blindly following whatever David Duchovny says or anything sort of way, but like, you know, when the guilds speak up and if they call for a viewing strike or a, you know, enthusiast promotion strike, that's when I would take action personally.
Yeah.
But if I see, you know, if I see compelling reasons, I think, from other sources, then, you know, we can kind of discuss it and kind of see and, you know, listen to the community and stuff as well.
Right on. Yeah. And I have to say, I haven't been super present on Twitter, and, you know, I'm not really sure what kind of conversations are being had about this stuff either. I'm not seeing too much, so. I'll try to keep an eye a little more as we get closer. So, all right. Well, that's 28 minutes on the topic of if we should discuss Ahsoka or not, and the strike in general. Where do you want to go from here, Ryan? We've got a little bit of time. We can talk about the Ahsoka trailer, which came out. Maybe just like general thoughts on it, like. How did you feel?
Yeah.
Were you excited? I'm asking you, brother.
Yeah. So this is a weird one. The trailer definitely. The first thing that like I texted to you all when after watching it was like it has like some major fan film vibes. Just in the look and the like sheer amount of fan service, which is just like off the chain for something like this. But that's stuff that, you know, I could kind of take or leave. That's not really, you know, it didn't really spark much for me in that way. But what I do think is cool about this trailer is it just seemed really fun. You know, I think there's just a lot of like cool Star Wars-y things happening, and you know, I'm a you know, I have some nostalgia for like the Heir to the Empire books, the Thrawn books, so seeing that stuff kind of play out here is cool. So I don't know. It's hard to say. If I feel like the show could definitely kind of go either way. You know, it could just kind of maintain like a sort of like fan wish fulfillment sort of thing, where, you know, you see all your favorite cartoons in the flesh. Or, you know, I think I had pretty low expectations for Mandalorian season 3, and that ended up being like a huge pleasant surprise to me. So you know, I think I'm open-minded to it, but I'm not like really invested. How about you?
Yeah, I think I'm excited. You know, I'm excited. I definitely feel the fan film vibes of it, or the, you know, kind of expanded universe vibes, or what do you want to say? We're just we're paused on a shot of Sabine here. For whatever reason, I'm trying to play the trailer and it doesn't want to play. But I can scrub through it, you know, and so when I scrub through it, it gives us some major soap opera setting on a television vibes, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you're seeing that on your end or not, Ryan, but it looks real camcordery as I scrub through, because it seems like it's playing in, I don't know, 60 frames a second or something. You getting that at all or no?
Yeah, but that's also kind of the look of this show.
Yeah. One of the big things in the trailer was seeing Thrawn for the first time, and it's like, whoa, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Thrawn's going to be like, trying to think of, there was another Star Wars show recently that had something similar. It was like a character from animation. Maybe, am I thinking of Cad Bane? Maybe somebody else, because I think Cad Bane looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there's been times in Star Wars where it's like a little off-putting, especially when you see screenshots. Oh, the Inquisitor from Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Grand Inquisitor. I remember, like, Twitter was all aflutter when the first still images of the Grand Inquisitor popped up. His head's too big, all that stuff. But I thought he actually looked fine in the show. But I got to say, like, the first time watching this trailer and seeing Thrawn, I was like, oh, wow, that looks kind of weird. But I think, I'm sure in practice, it'll be fine.
It's a cosplayer.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I think it does look very wish fulfillment, expanded universe kind of channeling. But I think I'm excited for that. I think that's fun, you know, or it seems like it could be fun, I guess. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. It seems like it knows what it is and what it's trying to be. And I think there's a place for that, you know? And so, I guess maybe one way to think of it is maybe Dave Filoni is just going full Filoni on this, you know what I mean? And just like, I'm the guy who made The World Between Worlds. I'm the guy who did the Mortis saga or whatever. Like, I like wolves that talk, and, you know, like, that's the stuff I'm into, you know what I mean? So I'm just going to make that show. And I think we're at a point where we have enough different flavors of Star Wars where, you know, that works, right? I'm excited. I think it looks like a lot of fun. I don't have super high expectations. I think we talked about that, right? Like, I don't have super high expectations. If this show just turns out to be okay, I think I'll be okay with that, you know? And I don't have as much riding on it as I do something like, Obi-Wan Kenobi or Andor or something like that. So, but yeah, I think it looks very, how do I put this? It looks, it looks quite, high quality, but also I think just the style of it is, it is very heightened and is very sci-fi or fantasy. I guess what I'm trying to say is that it looks kind of fan filmy, not in a quality way, but in like a, we're really fans of this stuff and we're having fun with it kind of way. You know what I mean? I think Mandalorian season 3 looks like that sometimes, where it looks incredible, like from a technical perspective, but it also feels like we're having fun with like cool stuff, cool Star Wars stuff. We're just throwing it all out there and having fun with it, you know? So I'm trying to say that this has a very unique style and look to it without sounding like I'm criticizing the technical or artistic kind of execution of it. Cause I, you know, it all looks great to me, but it also looks kind of silly in a good way to me as well.
Yeah, I think there's kind of like a thin line between those two things that this show is kind of walking, and you know, I would say Mandalorian across all three seasons kind of did. You know, it's very much so like an extremely digital production. You know, it doesn't look the way something like Andor or, you know, a Star Wars film typically looks. And, you know, that it is what it is. Like, that is it's the cost of the sheer quantity of Star Wars things we have now. You know, they can't all have the budget and, you know, artistic ambitions of, you know, something like, you know, Last Jedi or Andor, like, because those things are kind of rare in just all genre entertainment outside of Star Wars. And so, like, it's like, okay, well, we either wait, you know, 5 to 10 years between these, like, really, you know, like, perfect Star Wars projects, or, you know, we get a few things a year, and, you know, not everything is, really, you know, at that level, I guess.
But it also seems like it's doesn't even aspire to be those things. You know what I mean? Like it wants to have the look that it has. You know what I mean? Like it wants to look pulpy, or it wants to look heightened. You know what I mean? So, because I think that doesn't feel good. Like when you're watching, like there's a few moments maybe in Obi-Wan Kenobi where it feels like it wants to be more like what you're talking about, but it feels more sci-fi channel. You know what I mean? Whereas like I'm watching this and it feels like it's just like, we're sci-fi channel, let's go. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't even seem like it's trying to be something else. And I don't know that that's a budgetary thing as much. I mean, it's probably at least partially, but like it also seems like it's just an identity thing. Like we know what we are and what we want to be, and what we want to be is a fun kind of comic booky sort of take on more comic booky or more kind of, and I understand, like, you know, there's plenty of comic books that, that don't fit the way I'm using the term, but you know, more pulpy, more kind of just fun, sort of take on things. So,
well, I mean, it's where your priorities lie. And I think, you know, you have someone like Tony Gilroy who's like, no, we are going to use real sets. We're going to build these sets. We're going to, like, I'm going to specifically coach actors to not act like they're in a Star Wars thing. And, you know, that's like his vision for it. And I think, you know, someone like Dave Filoni, like, is like, no, I don't care if we shoot this, like, all on the volume. Like, I want the most, like, his vision of Star Wars, you know, I want the most of that. And I just want, like, people to see these characters and they're going to, like, act super Star Wars-y and have, like, one-liners and, you know, all this. And, you know, that's like the priority here. And I think it's just like a different approach. And, you know, I think it's cool that we can have these, you know, different flavors in the Star Wars buffet.
Yeah. I'm really curious. The last thing for me on Ahsoka here on the trailer and my anticipation is, as someone who loves Rebels, I'm pretty curious to see how all of the Rebels characters and the Rebels elements are going to kind of translate into live action and how I'll feel about those things, because we've known for a long time that the Ahsoka show was going to be a major, like, Rebels reunion and feature a lot of Rebels elements. But I think this trailer, more than any previous promotional material, has been, like, very... Mm-hmm. Like, this is Star Wars Rebels. I mean, we see Sabine on a speeder on Lothal going down one of those long, like, highways that we saw a million times in Rebels. Mm-hmm. Plenty of, like, you know, action shots of Chopper, you know, in battle. Lots of footage of Sabine. Lots of footage of Hera. Dialogue from Ezra. I mean, it's very, very Rebels, right? Like, super, super Rebels. Mm-hmm. And I love Rebels, and so I'm just curious to see how it'll all translate and how I will feel about it. I have no doubt that these characters and the actors portraying them are going to be great. Like, in terms of, if you didn't watch Rebels and you were just watching, like, you watched Mandalorian and you watched Book of Boba Fett, now you're going to watch this Star Wars TV show, you know, but you weren't really familiar with Rebels. Mm-hmm. I bet they're all going to be completely just, you know, you'll just accept those characters, right? But, like, I remember watching mm-hmm. the first episode of The Mandalorian that featured Ahsoka in live action and feeling like, it kind of feels like Ahsoka, but it kind of doesn't feel like Ahsoka to me. You know what I mean? Like, there was, like, mm-hmm. a real kind of... Mm-hmm. And guess what? Like, when you take a character who is animated and you translate that character into live action, they probably need to change, right? They probably can't be quite the same. I know Lars Mikkelsen has talked about how he's had to adjust his performance of Thrawn between animation and live action, and what one thing works in animation, it might not work in live mm-hmm. action, right? But still, as somebody who loves that show Rebels, I wouldn't say I'm nervous or worried about it, but I'm very curious to see how each of these characters is gonna kind of come off in live action. Like Sabine, Natasha Lou Bordizzo, I believe is the actor's name. I think I've been most impressed by the footage I've seen of her. But, like, not hearing mm-hmm. Tia Sakaar's voice as Sabine, it's just, like, it's still a little off-putting, you know what I mean? And it's nothing to do with the performance mm-hmm. or the actor necessarily, but just, like, I've spent so many hours with Tia Sakaar playing that character that it's a little tough to hear someone else playing that role, even if I think they're doing a great job. So I'm just curious to see how that will all shake out when I watch the show.
Yeah, totally. Like, I like Rebels. It's not really my favorite, like, Star Wars thing, or, like, towards the top of my list, even. So that stuff isn't really... I kind of hadn't even really thought about that stuff. It was more, like, oh, yeah, there's those people. they're just kind of, like, Star Wars characters to me. So Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's definitely going to be like, I think, it'll be like the, you know, the cave in Dagobah. Like, it's, you know, whatever you bring in there with you is going to be your experience.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm bringing a lot with me, so I'll have to try to keep that in check.
Yeah.
That's a great point. All right, cool. Well, I mean, we're both looking forward to Ahsoka in our own way, and it's kind of wild that we're getting close, you know, to Ahsoka, and it might be our last new piece of Star Wars content for a while, considering all things considered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although a Skeleton Crew could might be done or close enough to done. That might be on the way still. But anyway, Ahsoka will be here soon, and we'll see what comes after that. You know, to reiterate what we already belabored for 30 minutes almost, you know, whatever will be as far as more Star Wars content in the future, because we definitely want to support the writers and actors and other creative people who are on strike right now. And you know, it's okay by us if we have to wait a little while for some new Star Wars stuff. And you know what? There's a lot of old Star Wars stuff out there, Ryan, that I would love to go back and enjoy and don't really have time to all the time, right? So I think there's plenty of Star Wars out there if we have to take a little break from new Star Wars.
Yeah, it's still, like, crazy to me how much I absolutely loved Andor. Like, it's one of my favorite Star Wars things ever, and I've only watched it once.
Yeah.
I only watched it as it was airing. Like, yeah. Which is just wild, because I have rewatched some pretty garbagey Star Wars stuff. I've rewatched things many, many times that are not on the level of Andor. Yeah. And that things that I didn't even like that much, that I rewatched a bunch of times. And yeah, it's wild to me that, like, I haven't rewatched that. And, you know, there's always a backlog of things. There's comics, there's books, like there's enough Star Wars that if we have to, you know, go dry for a couple years, like, we will be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might help us appreciate things a little more too.
Yeah, I really want to go back and watch Obi-Wan Kenobi again. I want to convince my family members that I live with to watch Andor. My wife is watching The Bear season 2. Is that what season it is, The Bear? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people are talking about The Bear. Mm-hmm. And what was the name of the character in Andor? Was it Skeen? The one member of the crew in the second arc who ends up kind of betraying the cause, and, you know, Cassian has to kill him in that hut. Mm-hmm. Like, I think his name was Skeen. I think that was the actor's or the character's name. Anyway, that actor is in The Bear.
Mm-hmm.
I saw her watching and I was like, yeah. I was like, oh, you like him? And she's like, yeah, he's great. He's great. And I was like, you know, he's great in Andor if you give it a try and you watch it with me, you know? And
yeah.
Anyway, so we'll see. But yeah, there's a lot to rewatch. And also there's a lot of great, like, old Star Wars content, like games and books and comics and things like that, you know, that we can always go back to. Ryan, did we want to talk about some games before we wrap up here? Or?
Let's use the last 10 minutes. Talk about some games here.
All right. Let's talk about some games. Yeah.
We'll just go through them real quick. So,
okay.
You know, I do a lot of old video game collecting. I have a collection of those things. And, you know, I'm always going to local shops. I'm always on the hunt. And one of the things I'm always just kind of looking for are older Star Wars games. And I hit the jackpot at one of my local stores recently. I bought a Sega 32X to plug in on top of my Genesis, and I got a copy of Star Wars Arcade, And also, then like the next weekend, I was out shopping and I found copies of Star Wars Episode One Racer and Jedi Power Battles for the Sega Dreamcast, which are games that I own on other platforms, but the Dreamcast versions are, you know, better versions of the N64 and PS1 games. So, yeah, I've been playing a lot of old Star Wars games recently.
Nice. Yeah, I saw that you had posted about the 32X Star Wars game, Star Wars Arcade, on your standard definition gaming account, and so I played that a little bit earlier today. I went to the Galloping Ghost Arcade in Chicago last weekend for my son Owen's birthday, and played some Star Wars games there. I played the Star Wars Trilogy arcade game, which is different than Star Wars Arcade that was ported to 32X. But that game, the 32X, the game that was ported to 32X, was right next to me as I was playing Star Wars Trilogy arcade. So I kind of saw people playing it to my left, and then I played it a little bit today on 32X here. So that was cool. And I'm going to play that some more because I think it's really cool. It's the Star Wars arcade game made by Sega for arcades and then ported to 32X. It's in a lot of ways, it's just like I guess it would have been like 15-ish years newer, 10 to 15 years kind of updated of the original Star Wars
from
arcade
the Atari.
Game. Yeah, because it just feels like that Atari arcade, you know, Star Wars game, right? Like
totally,
it's like vector-esque graphics, and it's just a sort of updated and more modern, you know, kind of version of that. So that was really cool. Like, I like the Atari, you know, Star Wars game, I have played that numerous times on my GameCube, on a disc.
Yep.
Is it Rogue Squadron? One of those games has that.
Rebel Strike pre-order.
The pre-order, okay, it's like a demo disc or something, I think, even, right?
So
I played it in the arcades a few times too, and then and played it on that demo disc. But anyway, I like that, but it kind of feels like this, you know, 90s arcade game is the way to go if you want to kind of get that experience in a, I mean, it's pretty old now, it's 30 years old at this point or something like that, right? But it's considerably more, you know, more modern than the original arcade game.
Yeah, it's it was really interesting because like I'd played it in the arcade, but I'd never actually played like the 32X version. I had just like through an emulator, and this was, you know, like probably a decade and a half ago, and it wasn't like the greatest experience, but I could kind of parse out, you know, what it was. So I was doing like a little research on it before I posted about it, and it was developed on the I think it's called the AM1 board, but it was Sega's big step into polygonal 3D gaming. So it's like what like Virtual Racing and the original Virtual Fighter were on, which were like just hugely important games that kind of ushered in the era of like 3D gaming. And there was at one point when the game was in development, the working title was Virtua Star Wars, which I think is pretty sick. But that's the vibe. It's these kind of like simple, you know, simple polygonal approximations of Star Wars stuff, which I think is just like a really charming art style. But it's like basically just like a score attack mode where you're, you know, just trying to do all the things and shoot down the ships, and it's like really simple, but it's you know, really replayable too, because you're just like trying to get a better score and stuff, and it's just very fun game.
And it features Admiral Akbar, voice recordings of Admiral Akbar. If he didn't sound anything like Admiral Akbar, like it was just a completely different interpretation of that character. So that's fun. There's also X-Wing pilots that like speak to you and stuff, and Darth Vader and whatever. But like Akbar's just like, we just got a guy and we put him in a room and we had him say the lines, and we didn't even bother in any way to consider what he sounds like in the movie. So
yeah, he just sounds like a dude. It's pretty great.
But you said also Jedi Power Battles and Pod Racer for Dreamcast. Those are games I've played on the Dreamcast a lot, and but I can't find the discs right now. I gotta find those discs or rebuy them, I think, because I still have the Dreamcast. I played a little bit of the PlayStation 1 version of Jedi Power Battles recently. But I want to play the Dreamcast one. That's the one I played, you know, at the time. I just gotta find that disc. It's probably dirt cheap.
Better.
Yeah, I bet it's pretty cheap too to get a disc.
They both go for about 30. So affordable, but not exactly, you know, cheap. Impulse buy. Like, they were definitely ones that I'm like, okay, I want this. Let me check the condition of the manual and everything to like make sure I want to spend the money. But I'm really glad I did, because like I had just recently played a bunch of Star Wars Episode I Racer on N64, which is a game I love. But it was like very fresh in my mind what that game looked and felt like, and the Dreamcast version is just like such an improvement visually. The visuals are just so much more clear, and less muddy and everything.
They are the same game though, because they are the same game. Okay, because the arcade game is not the same game. It's a different game. Okay.
No. That's totally different. Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
And then with Jedi Power Battles, they like completely reworked that game from the PS1 version. It's almost like a remake. Wow. It's way more than just better visuals. There's better checkpoints. It controls better. It's more responsive. It's less difficult. It's just like they like went in and like really kind of tweaked it to make it just play much better. I struggle with that game on PS1, and I've played it like quite a bit, and I was able to just kind of breeze through the first few stages on Dreamcast because it was just such a smoother experience.
It feels really clunky on PlayStation 1. I feel like it feels very
it's really clunky. Slow. The button, like, it's not movement and attacks and jumping are just not responsive. It's
You feel like you're kind of fighting bad. Everything the whole time.
But it's like really smooth on Dreamcast.
And I played it a fair amount on Dreamcast. I was like, I had that disc, and you know, I mostly played Virtua Tennis, but I did play a lot of, you know, of that too. So I don't know where I put that disc. I still have my Dreamcast. I still have both controllers. I still have the like little carrying case I bought for it at Circuit City. I still have Code Veronica. I got a lot of stuff, but like for whatever reason, and I think I have the jewel case for Power Battles, but the disc isn't in there, you know, so I'll have to keep searching, but. Or just buy another copy. I don't know. Or burn the CD, because I think you can do that with Dreamcast, right? But
you can. Or if you have the case, just buy a loose disc. It'll be significantly cheaper.
There you go. Yeah. I don't have a CD burner anymore, so I guess I really can't burn the disc. But So. All right. Maybe we can wrap up there, Ryan. I did watch the Return of the Jedi creatures feature, but and took a few notes on that creature feature. Yeah, I'll just mention it briefly. Maybe we'll come back to it at some point in the future. Our friend and listener, Ian, suggested that we talk about that. But that was kind of like, I had said that we were going to maybe in our next episode talk more about Return of the Jedi. And then we didn't record a podcast for multiple weeks. And so it's been a while since we kind of talked about that stuff. And anyway, but I did watch that documentary, which I'd seen before. What is the name of it? I need to look that up. It's from Creatures. Let me see. I'm almost there, Ryan. This is great. Classic Creatures. Great. That's what it's called. Yeah, Classic Creatures. Hmm. Classic Creatures. And so that was a little documentary that came out in 1983. I was 1 year old. So I don't remember that, but I've heard other Star Wars fans who were of age at the time say that it was a great thing because they didn't have access to Return of the Jedi at home. You know, they saw it in the theater once or twice, but, you know, they couldn't, you know, really watch the film again for years. And so, you know, having that documentary like that was, you know, shown on, I don't know if it was shown on HBO or ABC or, you know, something, but a lot of people would record it or mm-hmm. whatever. It was just like a way to see some of that stuff again. So that's cool. But yeah, there's just like, there was a lot of great, you know, kind of elements of it. It's like, it's narrated by mostly Carrie Fisher, but Billy Dee Williams does some narration as well. And it's just so kind of charmingly corny to have these actors very obviously reading the script, but it's, you know, that 80s kind of like classic television thing where it's like they're reading the script off of a cue card in front of them, but they're looking right into the camera and they're playing it off as if it's just something yeah. they're saying to you in the moment, you know what I mean? And so it's just so like yeah. kind of funny and corny in that regard. I would love to see, like, can you imagine like Daisy Ridley and John Boyega and you know, the modern cast doing something like that. I feel like that would be so fun. So that's one, you know, kind of great element of it. It features a ton of, because there's narration and, like I said, these actors kind of introduce certain segments of the documentary, but there's just a ton of, like, behind-the-scenes B-roll of Phil Tippett and, you know, other, you know, members of the ILM team, like, building these creatures and working on this stuff behind the scenes. And, you know, you get to see, like, the mechanical innards of Jabba the Hutt or, you know, like, all that kind of stuff. It's, like, it's really, really cool. And there's a ton of great footage of behind-the-scenes stuff. So even if you, I wouldn't suggest this, but even if you were to watch the documentary, like, with the sound turned off, right, there's just a ton of great, you know, B-roll of these creatures and these artists, you know, creating them. And I think it's worth watching for that reason. I'm sure you've seen this before. Like, I had seen it before, but it had been a lot of years since I've watched it. Do you have any recollection of that documentary, Ryan, or no?
It's like kind of sounds familiar. Where would one have watched it before?
Good question. I know it was released on VHS at some point. I assume it's on the DVD release of the original trilogy or the Blu-ray release of the original trilogy. I didn't even check to see if it's on Disney Plus. I think it is, but I had at some point bought Return of the Jedi on iTunes or whatever, you know, like the digital version of Return of the Jedi, or maybe I just got a code with the 4K disc. But anyway, like, I just opened the movie up on the iTunes or, you know, Apple TV app or whatever, and it was there in the bonus features, so I just watched it that way. But I think I probably first saw it on DVD or something, I don't know. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it was a DVD bonus feature, then I probably watched it at some point.
Yeah. But there's a great line in there. I think it's the Blast Point guys. I don't know. I've heard people quote George saying that with the Ewoks, they dared to be cute. That's what they were doing with the Ewoks.
Oh, yeah.
And that, yeah.
Yeah.
That line is in the documentary.
I've heard that line.
Yeah, which is great. Dare to be cute, which I love. So that was a highlight. There's some segments later on in the documentary where they it's kind of like, do you remember that R2-D2 Behind the Dome mockumentary from where it's like, oh well, like what if R2-D2 was a real character, like not just a character in a movie but like a real creature or whatever, and like this is how he lives his life outside of the movies, you know? There's like some fun segments of this documentary that feature like, you know, Gamorrean guards walking around, and there's a little segment where they're all getting ready to get shipped off from California to England for the shooting, and they're like walking into their shipping crates, and like Chewbacca and a couple other characters walk up to a Pan Am Airlines ticket agent to get their ticket to fly out to England and stuff. So there's some fun stuff in there like that.
Love it.
And another like really great part of this documentary, and I mean it was very obviously like made for like, you know, ABC or something like that, where it was made for a very general audience and to be shown like on primetime television or whatever, you know. But that being said, it does kind of briefly highlight the history of special effects. Like it shows clips from Godzilla and from Frankenstein. It talks about how Phil Tippett took things that he worked on for Dragon Slayer and, you know, brought them into Return of the Jedi. And so it does, even though it's very silly and it's very broad, it does do its best, I think, to honor the legacy of special effects and the history of that. And it even kind of does like a little bit of the light and magic thing where it's like, yeah, everybody knows these special effects are cool, but like let's learn about the people, the individuals who created these things, you know. Not a ton. I mean, I'm, you know, you're talking about a few minute or two long segments or whatever, but it does kind of make you familiar with the people behind some of these great, you know, magic tricks and illusions and stuff like that. So in that regard, it's really cool. So yeah, if you're listening and it's been a while since you've seen it, you could check for it on Disney Plus. I bet it's on there. But definitely if you have the Blu-rays or the digital release of Return of the Jedi, you can access it there. And it's pretty fun. So good suggestion from our friend Ian to talk about that. And we didn't quite do it justice, but wanted to share a few thoughts on that at least.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go ride my bike from one side of Iowa to the other. Ryan, you are going to go administrate for the next week or two. And then we'll reconvene.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. Cool. Hey, I did make a blue sky for the Blockade Runner, which is cool.
Yes.
You gave me the invite code, Ryan, because you're like a Blue Sky original or something. I did. You've been on there forever.
For a little bit now. Couple months?
Long enough to get codes, right? You don't just get those right away. They don't give those to any Tom, Dick, or Harry.
It's like you get like one a month. If you're like an active user, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're on there. We're on Blue Sky now.
Mm-hmm.
So the Blockade Runner. And I think it's the Blockade Runner. I don't know. You'll find us on Blue Sky. You're listening. You're probably not even on Blue Sky yet because it's still in beta. Yeah, search Blockade Runner. We'll pop up. Actually, I'm pretty sure the account name is Blockade Runner. Not the Blockade Runner, but Blockade Runner. On Twitter, we are Blockade Run. Because it wouldn't let me go all the way through Blockade Runner. But I think on Blue Sky, it's Blockade Run. So if you're listening and you're on there,
Blockade Runner .bsky.social.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Okay. All right. Cool. So we're there. You can find us there. We're still on Twitter at Blockade Run. And you can email the show, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on any of the topics discussed today or Star Wars in general. So you can do that. And we also have a Discord, and there will be a link to our Discord in the show notes. Mm-hmm. That's a place you can come chat with us and some of our friends who, you know, are talking about Star Wars all the time. So that'd be great if you're a Discord user. Ryan, do you have any social media you want to plug?
Yeah, I'm mostly posting on Blue Sky these days. Just standard definition gaming over at Blue Sky.
Okay. All right. Very good. Cool. Well, thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.
Dare to be cute.